Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It's time to get green. Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser are here. All natural, no pesticides, no artificial ingredients. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
Here we go. It's another edition of the Organic Gardeners and Doug's final day at the Duquesne Light Pittsburgh Home and Garden Show. So get down and say hello to Uncle Dougie. He would love to see you. By the way, 10th caller right now wins our first gift certificate giveaway from the good folks at Sorgles, 412-922-1020. And they would love, especially with daylight savings time, they're a little tired. They want you to do the work. So get on the phone and give them a call, 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. Text me on the right out of middle line, best deal in town. Here he is, Doug Oster, and here she is, Jessica Walliser. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Doug Oster. Where am I? Just take it over, Jess. I'm going home.
And I'm horticulturist Jessica Walliser. Apparently, I'm the only person awake in the studio.
No, I'm fine.
Shelby was awake this morning.
I'm wide
awake. Ashley's awake.
Yeah.
It's the women that are awake this morning.
What? Who?
Yeah, just not Doug, I guess.
I agree.
You're awake. You're awake,
I
Rob.
Am awake.
You're awake. You got the coffee in hand. You and Doug both have your coffee in hand simultaneously.
I don't have coffee.
Yeah, but you got the Davy Tree mug. That's pretty cool.
I know. We're matching.
When are they starting back?
I don't know. Sometime.
Soon.
Start cutting
soon.
Trees or something. I don't
know. Oh, jeez.
Hey, just shut up and do your job, will you? Come on. Be happy.
My last day at the home show.
You had a great run. People love you down there.
Talking about my favorite plants.
And the most important thing.
Giving away Heart of Italy tomatoes.
There
seeds.
You go.
Come on down and see me.
Okay.
It'll be fun. And you have a chance to win a flower carpet rose. Holy cow. And I got all sorts of pollinator seeds. You want to come for free? Check out the details at everybodygardens.com and come see my friends at Chapin's.
You woke up very suddenly there, didn't you?
They have a nice booth and they have these really cool looking wind chimes and they have something you would love. Habitat for beneficial bugs, like those houses.
Oh, those little bug hotels.
And I have a question for you because I saw something online. Do those butterfly houses work?
No.
Okay.
No, they do not.
Now, the thing at Chapin's is not
They're
a butterfly
cute,
house. The thing at Chapin's is a cool thing. It works. It's got the holes in it. But the butterfly house has just got and that's just somewhere. I saw that somewhere else. I saw that online or something. Mm-hmm. And it just has a little slit in it for a butterfly.
Right, right. But the butterflies don't typically go in there. The ones that overwinter, like the morning cloaks and the commas and question marks that overwinter in the garden, they'll be out under the leaf litter or in a, you know, under some tree bark or something like that. They won't go in the little butterfly house, but they're cute. I mean, they're cute to hang up. But those the insect hotels like they have at the mm-hmm. Chapin's booth, that's really more for our little native bees. So, like the leafcutter bees and the mason bees, they will nest in little tiny holes like that. And so those insect hotels really become a nice little place for them to set up their brood chambers and help pollinate your fruit trees.
Have you been outside? Has anything pushed up in your garden?
You know what? I was out yesterday. What was I doing? I don't even remember. Oh, I went out to check on the chickens and stuff. And the strawberries, interestingly enough, my strawberries have little tiny baby leaves already starting to emerge, which is definitely a little bit early for them. But they're in a raised bed, so I think it kind of dries out sooner and it's really in a nice, sunny, exposed spot, so they'll be fine.
We have to do our annual warning. Too wet to dig.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always big on planting on St. Patrick's Day, but the soil just isn't ready, you know? That's another week away, but, you know, and if I plant this early in the season, next week, I got to throw compost down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't be digging. Although I am excited about, I'm waiting for the crocuses. Even when the snow was still on that bed, I could see they were just starting to poke through. That just for the, I guess the day length makes them come up. I don't know because mm-hmm. it wasn't warm enough. And I figure today and tomorrow would be some snow crocuses. Get one sunny day, Man, they're going to go. Mm-hmm. I can't wait. It's just, oh, that was a tough start to March, I thought. Cold.
I couldn't agree more. But you should explain to people, when you talk about planting on St. Patrick's Day, that what you're planting is cold season.
Yeah, super cold
crops.
Stuff. Peas, lettuce, radish.
Onion sets.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, stuff that can take the cold, doesn't care about the frost.
But the soil really matters with those, because if you plant your pea seeds and the soil is too wet, they're going to rot in the ground. So it doesn't matter that you planted them nice and early, because they're going to rot. So it's better to wait till the soil is just right, dries out, it's a nice texture. And we always like to say that when you'll know that it's ready when you go out with your spade, your shovel, and you go out to dig and you turn it over. If it's sticking to the shovel and clumping, it's much too wet to be out and working
in.
And
you'll be battling those clumps the rest of the year.
Yes, because they kind of dry into a solid clod, and then you end up with lots of problems.
Anything new for you this year?
I haven't really thought very much about my garden yet this year. It's been a busy winter.
Well, you just finished two books.
Yes, I did. And I'm needing a little bit of a garden rest. So I will start thinking about, I haven't actually even ordered my seeds from the seed catalogs or anything like that. So I always know that my local nurseries have a good stock too. So if I don't get to order from the catalogs, I'll just head down and pick up some seeds off the rack.
I have some weird stuff for you.
Okay, good. You know. You always do. You always hook me up with some couple of funky tomatoes and some
good
flowers.
That's one really fun thing about the home show is the seeds that people bring. You know, they bring, boy, one guy comes every year. He sent me an email. He said, won't be able to make it down this weekend. Had a massive heart attack.
Oh, my goodness.
Survived the Widowmaker. But I'll be down probably Tuesday. That doctor wants me to walk and everything. And he came and brought me some seeds.
Oh, my goodness.
Was telling me, I drove myself to the hospital. You know, if I would have waited for the ambulance, I wouldn't be here. I was like, jeez.
That's a fan.
That's a fan.
Yeah. Right. I have people say, you're going to cause me a heart attack, so I'm not coming down. All right, listen, we're going to take a call right now, but I want to remind all of you, we'd love to hear from you. So fill up these phone lines, 866-391-1020. Congratulations to Martha from Clinton, winner of that gift certificate to Sorgles. Here's Rich in Crafton. Hey, Rich.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, Doug, I heard my friends Lauren and Joe saw you at the home show yesterday.
Yeah, they did.
My question is about these cicadas that they only come up once every 17 years. There's a lot of grasshoppers all over the place, and now you never see a grasshopper. Could you explain this? I assume it's all the weed killers they put on these lawn surfaces and stuff.
Yeah, so we missed a little bit of the call there because it cut out. But the periodic cicadas, yes, this is supposed to be the year that the 17-year cicadas emerge. So
what was it a couple years ago?
Well, there's always
cicadas. Is that
cicadas.
The 11?
Yeah, there's different broods of them. So different pockets of the country have them come out, and even different pockets of the state will have them come out at different times depending where they are in that life cycle. So I believe this is the year for the brood that's Allegheny County, that this is the 17 year that they're supposed to come out. So, you know, they can predict what it's going to be like based on populations of the last 17 year cycle, which was pretty crazy 17 years ago. So I think they're thinking it's going to, you know, there's going to be a lot. But the truth is that these insects, they don't eat your plants. Like cicadas, the 17-year cicadas and even the dog day cicadas, they don't eat your plants. They lay eggs in the tips of trees, the tree branches. So the female cuts these little, I don't know what to even call them, little, they're not really holes. They're kind of like slits down the length of the stem and deposits eggs. So they can cause a little bit of tip dieback. But other than that, they're not really.
Are there certain trees they like better than others, or they're just going to find the trees they want?
They're going to find the trees they want. Yeah.
Somebody was telling me at the show.
There might be preferences.
Some kind of fruit tree that 17 years ago they had trouble with. But
yes.
For the most part.
Yeah, ours was on the maple in the front yard. So, you know, I think it, but it's nothing you can't prune out, and they're not going to cause significant damage. And the grasshoppers, I had read something about them as well. And I think there's a lot of insects. Well, I know that there's a lot of insects that are in massive population decline. And personally, I do think it has a lot to do with the systemic insecticides that we put on our lawns and that are on a lot of nursery plants. So this is why buying from local nurseries is very good versus a big box that uses those. So,
well, you'd be happy to hear that, you know, everybody at the show is very you know, on our page saying, like, you know, we want to bring in, we want to help the bugs, we want to help pollinators, we mm-hmm. don't want to use chemicals. Mm-hmm. So hopefully the tide's changing.
866-391-1020, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. Text us on the Red Automotive Line, best deal in town.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
All right, we're back talking about the Duquesne Light Pittsburgh Home and Garden Show. Crowds have been phenomenal, huh?
Oh, I think yesterday was the busiest I ever saw it. It's just this crush of people walking through their inch by inch, step trying by step, to get right. to the Doug Oster stage.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank goodness he's not, you know, stuck on himself. You know what I'm saying? Hey, good morning.
I like to say I'm kind of a big deal.
You know, he used to be conceited until I found out he was perfect. But anyway, folks, good morning. I have an astro red poinsettia. I noticed the leaves are starting to green up and the plant is growing. I would like to move it into a larger pot. Can I do that? And what about fertilizer? That's from Dan.
Well, no problem putting it in a bigger pot. Good for you, keeping that poinsettia going. I got like four or five poinsettias going. That poinsettia series that I always talk about, pink and white, that thing loves growing indoors. And yeah, pot it up and... I don't know. Where are we? Yeah, I guess we could fertilize now, huh?
Yep. And within the next couple weeks, you can start. I wouldn't overdo it, though, with poinsettias because you can get really tall, lanky growth.
Really don't need any fertilizer on that.
Yeah. So especially if you're going to use new potting soil. When you repot it, if you're going to use a new potting soil that has a slow-release fertilizer in it, you do not need to add any supplemental fertilization for like 6 months after that. So I would just, which pretty much gets you through, you know, the period of time that we would be actively fertilizing any houseplants anyway. So, yeah, I think you'd be fine. It's gonna be lush and beautiful this summer. Like they
make it outside.
Such great plants.
Take it outside when we get to the end of May, and you'll love it out there.
Derek in Natrona Heights up next for Doug and Jess, the Organic Gardeners, KDK Radio. Hey, Derek.
Hey there. I got a question for you about pumpkins. And my question, I just love eating them, but, you know, I figured I could grow them myself. But I was just wondering, you know, what would be the best time to plant them and, you know, what's the difficulty, you know, to take care of them and what might be the best time to, you know, harvest for the seeds and bake them?
Yeah, so pumpkins are actually pretty easy to grow. You want to wait to sow the seeds directly outdoors into the garden. Don't do them indoors under lights because they don't like to be transplanted. So they're best planted right out into the garden after May 15th. So May 15th is our average last frost date here in Western Pennsylvania. So you're going to want to wait until after that date to put them in.
Let me stop you real quick. They used to say plant them in hills, not meaning a hill, but vine crops like five seeds together.
Or mound.
Is that?
You can plant them in a mound, you know, groups of three together or five seeds together on a mound of soil that you kind of build up, which does help improve drainage, especially in our kind of clay soils. But you don't have to. I mean, you can plant them just as a regular row crop. You know, I would skip a container unless you can get like a 60-gallon container because they are really big plants. But they're really easy to grow. I think probably for a lot of people, the biggest problem that they have is that they forget what heavy feeders pumpkins are.
And drinkers.
Yes. So you have to make sure that I like to mulch with straw. So that keeps the fruits off of the ground and it really helps the moisture levels retain moisture in the soil, cuts down on weeds. So make sure you mulch the plants really well. Shredded up leaves would be another good thing you could use to mulch. And then I like to fertilize with a liquid organic fertilizer. So, like the Espoma company has one called Grow that's really good. Kelp emulsion. Mm-hmm. You could use fish emulsion. That would be another good one. But you want to make sure that you keep those plants regularly fed and, of course, work lots of compost into the soil.
And then do you have any kind of favorite variety that you like to grow as far as pumpkins?
For like, if you're talking about jack-o'-lantern pumpkins, like sort of that traditional orange pumpkin, I really like a variety called Howden, Howden. But then if you're talking about eating pumpkins, like I think he's talking about for actually eating the flesh, I love like the Cinderella pumpkins.
That's the one I was going to talk about.
Yeah.
I love that one. It's almost red and flat.
It's like a cheese wheel. It looks like a cheese wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for the Howden, I mean, would the seeds be kind of the same from like a Howden as a Cinderella, would they still be as tasty, or would they be different? I don't know.
That's a very good question. I mean, some of them...
But flesh-wise, the Cinderella one's better.
Oh, definitely, because it's a thicker amount of flesh. The Howdens are pretty thin-fleshed, but the seed cavity is different in different pumpkins. So as you're looking for, if your goal is to get the seeds, harvest the seeds for consumption, I might look at a variety that actually says for seed production because it probably has a larger seed cavity. It produces more seeds. So there are some that are actually bred for seed production.
And those vines will go everywhere.
Everywhere. I hope you have lots of room.
They're fun to grow, though.
They are. And they're one of those plants that, you know, you just, you put that little seed in, it's the size of your thumbnail, and you think to yourself, you know, you have faith, right, when you put it in, and then the next thing you know, it's just this giant 10-foot long vine and these big pumpkins.
You have to be what we call a vine wrangler. You've got to move them around, and that's what I do anyway.
Yeah.
You know, okay, you go on the edge of the fence and around the outside and then to the gate and around again.
So you like train them?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I just let mine go wherever they want to go.
Well, I don't have enough room. I got to keep them moving somewhere else until they go, you know, circle the garden two or three times.
Yeah, mine usually go out up over the fence and into the yard. So we have to mow around them, which is fine. But yeah, they're worth it.
All right, let's say hi now to Ann up next for Doug and Jess calling from the North Hills on the Organic Gardeners on KDK Radio. Hey, Ann.
Good morning. I want to know what I need to do to raise successful delphiniums from seed, and then I have question two.
Well, do you have any prayer cards?
I'm sorry?
He's being a smart aleck.
They're hard to grow. I had better luck with delphiniums in zone 5 than I do here. You know, they like it cool. They don't reliably come back. What should they do, Jess? You ever grow them?
I like
larkspur.
I like larkspur better just because it's a lot easier, but the delphiniums, man,
it's amazing.
There's nothing like them. I think part of the big issue with the delphiniums here in Western Pennsylvania is we have acidic soil. Our soils are naturally acidic. Delphiniums like a very sweet soil. So whatever place you plant them in the garden, I would make sure that you get the soil tested there and that you make sure that it's on the alkaline side and not the acidic side because that's where they're going to be happiest. They also don't like to have very wet soil. So,
wet soil?
Yeah, they don't like wet soil. So
they don't.
That doesn't mean
they like water.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
No wet soil, but they like water.
Exactly. That doesn't mean you should let them dry out. But what they need to have is well drained soil. So they need regular irrigation, but they need well drained soil. So this is why something like a raised bed would be a great place to try to grow delphinium, because it is well draining. And you can monitor the soil pH a little bit better in there. But you still need a prayer card. You'll still need lots of luck on your side because they are challenging plants to grow.
Start with seeds or plants, Jess?
If you can get plants, you can start with plants. But I have a feeling she's going to have... You can't even get plants in the nursery trade. You can sometimes in like a gallon perennial pot. But you might be better off starting your own seed.
I can't remember the name of the... Pacific Giant
hybrid.
I used to grow.
Yeah.
You recommend that for here?
I would try that one. Yep. I think that you could try any variety here, but you got to make sure that your soil is the best that it can be for you.
Let us know and give it a try. They're beautiful.
Pacific Giants, the fee-fi fo-fum of the garden world, right? All right. Listen, Doug and Jess, just getting warmed up. Doug, again, going to be at the Duquesne Light Pittsburgh Home and Garden Show. Final day today. Get down and enjoy over 1,800 exhibitors. I mean, 10,000 products, 10 acres, all under one roof. It's an incredible event. Congratulations to John Asanis, his son, and the whole crew, and everybody who works at the convention center for a job well done. More to come today, Rob Pratt Sunday, here on KDK Radio.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
All right, we have a Dollar Bank Instant Access we're going to get to, but we have some open phone lines, too. So if you've ever wanted to ask a question to Doug and Jess, now would be the time. And you can also maybe ask them, you know, what they like to eat, where they like to go on vacation, whatever. We want to hear from you. What's that?
Shoe size, whatever you need.
Yeah, whatever you need. We got it. By the way, we do have a Dollar Bank Instant Access I mentioned. We'll get to that. But the 10th caller right now wins a $25 gift certificate from Janoski's. And a week from today, they're a big St. Patrick's Day buffet at the restaurant. Yes, St. Patrick's Day, a week from today. Now, here it is. I have read that Planting pumpkins can be effective for choking out knotweed. Is that true? Thanks, Tom on the north side.
It's an excellent question. And I just happened to write something about this recently. And pumpkins, meant not every kind of pumpkin, but many pumpkins produce a compound from their roots and their leaves that's what's called allelopathic, which means it inhibits the growth of other plants. So a lot of people know that you can't grow much underneath a black walnut tree, right? Because it has juglone, which is a compound that's allelopathic. So pumpkins are another plant, and there's actually many of them, that produce these chemicals to prevent other plants near from growing near them, right? So a lot of times people will use pumpkins to help limit and control weed growth in certain areas. Now, can that, it effectively that, control knotweed?
That being said.
Right. Knotweed is, as you know, has these thick underground rhizomes. It's a very pernicious and invasive weed. I do think that I have read also that the pumpkins can help restrict its growth and its spread, but it's not going to completely get rid of the knotweed. But I will tell you, though, that it works great in a vegetable. Like, if you have a vegetable garden that's overrun by weeds, plant pumpkins in there for a year and just let them do their thing. And then the next year, then put down a mulch really early, heavy in the season, and you can get some good weed control by doing that method. So, and that Howden pumpkin is actually a really good variety for that. Because it's one that's sort of been standardly used to help manage weeds in big, like, organic farms and things like that. But it's not going to completely get rid of your Japanese knotweed. I wish it were that easy.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not.
Oof.
Yeah.
So we talked about, you know, starting some of these things right in the ground early. But, you know, when we're thinking about what we're going to be growing during the summer and getting seeds and stuff, you know, California Wonder Pepper is one that takes a long time to be ready. But then you've got some other ones that don't take quite as long. And all that information is on the seed packet, counting back those days from germination, figuring out what you're going to grow in the garden.
And that's actually that reading the seed packet. Seed packets are a great resource for determining when the right time is to plant things for here in Western Pennsylvania or wherever you live for folks listening on the internet. So if you do flip that seed packet over, Doug mentioned the days to germination. There's also something on there called the days to maturity, which is the amount of time that it takes for the plant to become mature enough to start to flower, in the case of that pepper.
My days to maturity were 72 years.
Was that it? Mm-hmm. You're still waiting?
Yep.
You got a long way to go. So I'm not going to go there. But anyway, so that's a good way to gauge when you should plant the seed. So if you look at, you know, something like a tomato, where, you know, ideally you'd like to be picking tomatoes July 4th, July 15th, somewhere in there, and then you count backwards from that date, then you can estimate the day that you should plant those seeds indoors. So it's way too early to plant our eggplants and peppers and tomatoes indoors under grow lights, but it's not too early to plant things like cabbage and kale and Brussels sprouts and broccoli. These are cool season crops that go out into the garden early, and you can start sowing their seeds indoors under lights now, and they'll be ready to go in a couple of weeks out into the garden.
All right, let's say hello to John. He's calling today from McMurray for Doug and Jess, the Organic Gardeners. Next hour, the Coons Cooking Hour on KDK Radio. Hey, John.
Good morning. Hey, is it too early to plant onion seeds and lettuce seeds in the ground outside?
I think you're a few weeks early for the lettuce. I usually go with mid to late March for lettuce outside. Again,
it's going to get cold again.
Yeah. So, you know, watch the forecast. Wait until you can get out there. We talked earlier about making sure that the soil is not too wet. That's really important. As for lettuce or onion seeds, it's interesting because a lot of people will grow their onions from sets. But actually, I always get much bigger onions by growing from seed. And you can even plant onion seeds the fall before, if you want. And then they'll germinate very late in the fall before, and they just sit in the ground, and then they germinate at exactly the right time in the spring.
See, he's ready to go.
So,
we want to plant something, you know, and I want to plant something, too. I think tomorrow, actually, I'm going to plant some lettuce in the greenhouse.
Yeah.
Because I can get away with that.
I think if you want to do something early, if you really want to do something early, I would pick radishes.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Because radishes can really
Never had much success with radishes.
And how were you doing it? When were you planting the seeds?
Oh, early. early, but I think the soil isn't right for radishes where I'm at. I think you need more sand. I just don't have the sandy step soil.
You know, I would just buy a bag of compost, $5, and I would throw it down on that bed. That's what I do for my radishes. And when you're starting early, you get the radish to sprout. It's going to do its thing for you. Again, if you're in the light soil, the light compost is a great medium for it.
Yeah, and I have very clay-based soil. I mean, everybody here in Western Pennsylvania does, and I grow really good radishes. But I think maybe a lot of times with root crops like radishes, and they don't form a nice little bulb on there, it's usually a twofold problem. One is we have a weather issue, so we have like a burst of warm weather in the middle of the spring, and that sometimes can mess up the radishes. And number two is the soil pH. Have you had your soil tested lately for pH?
Yeah, I have, and it seems to be pretty good.
All right.
Add a little lime to it on occasion, but That's good,
because a lot of times people have soil that's too far on the acidic side, which can affect the root production of radishes as well. So I would give them a try again, they're one of the things we can get out really early with them and do our exercise our green thumb. Same thing with arugula.
And with the radishes, the thinnings, you can eat the whole thing.
Yep.
It's wonderful. If it doesn't head up, if you've got a couple of them that don't head up, let them go to flower. The flowers are very good for pollinators, and then they put on what I love, those little seed pods. They taste just like radishes. When they're little like that, they're tender. When you have a salad at my house, it's a leap of faith.
You never know what you're going to find in there. Could be weeds.
Plenty of weeds in there. Dandelions, weeds.
Purslane.
Sure.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
All right, again, congratulations are in order for Judy from McDonald, winner of that gift certificate to Janoski's. Doug and Jess on the air.
Do you grow dahlias?
Some dahlias, yes. But usually I don't dig them up to overwinter them. I just buy them and treat them as an annual. I have done that plenty of times in the past, but I don't usually do that.
I have a friend, a gardening friend, that is like a dahlia nut, and she sent me a message the other day saying, 32 potted up, like she's already getting them potted up and ready to come out.
That's smart, right? That's smart. This seems really early, though, to even get them potted up.
I'll tell you what, her whole front yard and her whole side yard is dahlias. And, you know,
I bet that's beautiful.
She was at Longwood. She said she bought like 10 new ones.
Yeah.
And I mean, she has so many dahlias. I love going there at the end of the season and taking pictures of those flowers because, man, they are amazing.
And that's a good way to get a jump start on the season with those dahlias, potting them up indoors, like in a 6-inch pot or 8-inch pot, you know, planting those roots up, letting them sprout. You can pinch them once or twice, right, to get a nice bushier plant, more flowering branches on it. And then you get flowers earlier, which is like one of the things that with dahlias for me that drives me a little crazy is it does take so long to get those flowers, and I am kind of impatient.
Boy, I wish I could remember the ones from Proven Winners. I can't remember their name, but they have a whole series that are not day length sensitive or whatever it is that makes a dahlia bloom later.
Okay.
But it doesn't make a tuber, much of a tuber.
Oh.
So like 3 or 4 years ago at the trade show in Baltimore, mm-hmm. I met the Proven Winners guy, and he's like, oh, these dahlias are amazing because they'll bloom like an annual. You know, they'll start blooming in May and go all the way through. But again, no big tuber, which in your case would be no problem.
Right, exactly. Well, and I do like the ones you can grow from seed. Like you can grow some dahlias from seed as well. And sometimes you'll see them for sale at a nursery in like a 4-pack or a little 3-inch pot. They're usually, you know, much smaller in stature. They're often like a single flower instead of all of those double petals. But man, they are so prolific in how they bloom that it's almost worth just growing a few dahlias that you either buy from seed or start yourself from seed just because of the fact that you have a consistent production of flowers. And they flower earlier than the bigger ones. But there's nothing like those big dinner plate dahlias, man. You know, when the blooms are the size of your head, you know, it makes you feel pretty good about your green thumb.
And when you're talking about me, that's a big head.
That's a big round Irish head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Too fun. But there are such love. Like, you know, my favorite dahlia variety, if I had to choose, I love Café au Lait. Have you
seen that one? I don't know that one, but my favorite is Mystic Illusion. almost black foliage with yellow flowers. And then there's another one that has the black foliage and red flowers, but I don't know the name.
I've seen that one. When we were in Buffalo for the Garden Writers Conference a few years ago, and one of the things that we do at that conference is we get to go and see all these local gardens that, you know, normally wouldn't be open to the public, but they allow access to the garden writer groups. And there was just this incredible garden that really had quite a lovely focus on foliage. So it wasn't so much about, you know, flashy flowers everywhere as it was just sort of this blend of different foliage colors and textures. And they had that dahlia and with a real dark foliage and the orange flowers, and they had it partnered with orange leaved coleus and like a chartreuse elephant ear. And it was such a, I thought, what a great combination of plants and a great, you know, mixture of textures, mixture of foliage colors. Just, you know, there were like one or two dahlias on the plant flower wise. It was all about the foliage. Really, I love that. I actually
got some elephant ears again to winter over inside. One called Maui Gold.
As a plant?
Yep. It's like a house plant.
Nice.
I get them at the end of the season from Han. They use them as pond plants. And just like, you want these? Otherwise, we're just going into the dumpster. I'm like, yeah, I'll try and keep them going. And then last year, got them go through the year, put them outside in May. Man, they went crazy. Great. Like thriller for me for the inside of a container. I'm, you know, with all the shade.
Mm-hmm.
And now they look great on the windowsill. As the days are getting longer, we're getting more light. They're looking good. So I'm looking forward to putting those out. Those will go out in the greenhouse probably end of April.
Okay.
And then out in the garden in May. But when you're just at this point where you can get out, you get warm days, what's the first thing that you do when you start kicking around the garden and just kind of looking at it? Is there things to be cleaned up? Are there things to be thought about?
Yeah, well, I mean, I used to start my cleanup on these warm days in March, but now that I've, you know so much more about our pollinators and our native insects and how really they don't start emerging from their winter hibernation, let's say, until the temperatures are regularly in the 50s. So I try not to disturb my garden at all until a little bit later in the month when the temperatures start to go up a little bit.
Are you looking at your beds and thinking what's going to go where? Or do you know where everything's going to go?
I haven't thought about any of that yet. I really haven't. I haven't had time to think much about it. I did go out and prune my blueberries. So that's something you can do now. Prune your raspberries. That's something you can get started with. Really for me this time of year, it's more about starting seeds indoors, about getting prepped for that, choosing the varieties I'm going to grow in the vegetable garden. And ordering seeds and even thinking about like what varieties of potatoes I'm going to grow, you know, like that's something I still have yet to do. I haven't done my planning yet. So
at the home show, this is the kind of the fun, weird little things that can happen. Guy came up to me and he had a picture on his phone and he said, I'm trying to find this. Would you have seeds for this tomato? And it was called Dagmar's Perfection. Now, I knew what it was right away because I just did a story on a guy, Gary Ipsen from Tomato Fest, whose wife's name is Dagma.
Mm.
He named a tomato after her.
Oh.
And so I said, I got to take a picture of this picture. And
yeah.
I took a picture of it and sent it to Gary. He's the guy that gets up early in the morning, gives his wife some tea and Dagma the whole story. And so he was so excited that, you know, isn't that funny how things go around like that? Is there a caller there, Rob?
You know what? We are out of time.
All right, good. We're going to have a lot of fun down at the home show. I'll tell you that. Come down and see me. I'm speaking at 12, 2, and 4 o'clock. I can't wait to be down there. We have so much fun. It's going to be crowded, but you know, if you want to come a little later, it'll thin out. Remember, the Organic Gardener is always aimed to create a better place to garden.
And a safer place to live.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.